Hi, I'm Lou Graham, and you are watching The Jeremy White Show.
Our next guest is legendary Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, one of the members of founding members. I mean, come on, man. He's just an absolute legend. There he is right there. Lou Graham, everybody, getting set to perform upstate New York on August 7th with Steve Ogieri and John Payne in Asia. Mitch and I were hoping we can get over the border to come to this gig because we've literally been waiting over a year for this concert, and it's one of the things that we've been looking forward to the most. And so I'm really hoping we get over and see the show. Lou, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, guys. I'm doing well.
Good. How's the health? How you holding up?
I'm holding up great.
Good.
Good. So let's quickly talk about this. First of all, you are in the Songwriters Hall of Fame, which is, to me, more significant than the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Talk to me just quickly about that induction that came a few years ago and what it means to be recognized for being a talented songwriter.
It's incredibly gratifying. No slight to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at all. I think the Songwriters Hall of Fame is important because without a good song, you could be a great player and never gain the notoriety of having songs on the charts or anything. I think it boils down to the song before anything else.
Right. And I just realized you guys weren't inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And the fact that I thought you were is absolutely absurd because it's a disgrace that you're not in there.
There's a reason for that, that I can't get into, but,
political.
Yes, political. It is. Yes, it is.
That is unfortunate.
It's just a shame because it's like, you know, if anybody deserves to be in there, it's you guys. So the amount of records that you sold, not only the record sales, but it's like the amount of songs and the caliber and the quality of songs. So the fact that we said, yes, you are in the Songwriters Hall of Fame, I think, like you said, is more important than the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the way.
Yeah. And let's just mention this about Foreigner. Their first five albums, the debut album and the follow-ups, the first five were top five on Billboard.
Yeah.
That's quite a run.
And I don't think there's really been any other rock band or band in general or artist who have done that unless, you know, I mean, you guys were proper top 40.
Yep.
Yeah, we came out swinging.
Yeah. Yeah, you really do. So talk to me about this show, because you've got Steve Ogieri, you've got Asia with John Payne. You're coming out and doing a full set, or are you doing just four or five songs? What's sort of the arrangement for this show?
I think I'm going to be doing about six or seven songs.
Okay.
And it's pretty much split up evenly between Steve and John and myself. You know, and they're both great singers. And sometimes I sing backup for them.
Oh, wow.
Which nice. Is also fun for me.
Yeah.
And I mean, Asia is just a great band. You know, they're well known for the style of music they do, but believe me, they can rock.
Totally. Absolutely. And John is great.
He is.
The last time we spoke, it was at the show in Schenectady, which was a sort of farewell, unfarewell kind of show. And at that time, you had mentioned that Shadow King, the band that you were in with Vivian Campbell of Def Leppard, you had some unreleased songs. You might be doing some kind of expanded or deluxe edition. Where are we on that? I've understood that you've re-recorded or recorded six new songs.
Yes, the songs are recorded. They were taken from pieces of songs that never progressed to the point of being full on songs, and they didn't. Right. They obviously didn't make the album, but there was a spark of something there that was very good, I spent a lot of hours listening to it and massaging it. And I think I've got some very good rock songs, and would love to release it, maybe a couple EPs.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, because that Shadow King album is one of the greatest rock records to come out of the 90s, and yet not enough people know about it.
Yes. Yes, I know.
Yeah. And Lou, you've worked with some of the best musicians in the world. And, you know, talking about this project specifically, working with Vivian Campbell, talk about working with Vivian and what does he bring to the band?
His creativity and his style of guitar playing is its own thing. You know, it's enough to build around right there, and he plays very tasty.
Mm. What's the difference between
he's easy to work with?
Ooh.
In spite of the rumors that he's a
The one thing that I've heard about Vivian is that he's a perfectionist and just loves stuff to be done to a certain standard, I guess is the best word for it. And I guess sometimes that can run you into trouble, I guess, right?
Yes. Yeah. He is that way. And I mean, to a degree, you got to admire it for him. But sometimes the feel of a take and not the expertise of it, I feel, has to overrule.
Right.
You know, if it sounds great, don't keep doing it again.
Right. Well, talking about perfection, I mean, you got to work with one of the kings, if not the king of perfection, in Mutt Lange on the Foreigner 4 record.
Yes.
Talk up a little bit about that experience, because I've been sort of doing a whole bunch of interviews with tons of people that I've worked with Mutt, and the stories have just been absolutely phenomenal. Do you have any really cool tidbits of studio chatter that went on with you guys in the studio working on that record?
I certainly do. When we were recording Jukebox Hero, and I knew how I wanted that melody to come off the bridge and then start going higher and higher and then come down really hard for the beginning of the chorus, Jukebox Hero. Mm. He wanted me to, you know, like Bon Scott,
mm-hmm.
why don't you get up there screaming right now? I says, and then what do I have left for the chorus? Just more screaming. I says, I think it can be hard and intense, but you gotta, it's the B section. You gotta save a little bit for the chorus, but you know. Oh, I disagree. But you know, I did it his way, and we did it my way, and we ended up keeping my way.
Wow, so that's interesting.
Yeah, he out-mutted Mutt, which you don't really hear off very often. Mutt likes his way too.
He acquiesced, but not without a fight.
But in that sense, I feel like Mutt is agreeable. If you have a better idea, well, he's totally open to going with it.
Yeah, but if he thinks his idea is better, he just wants to overrule.
Mm.
You know, and that's why we had to compare the ideas, and both agree that how mine built in the bridge section to the chorus was better for the song.
Talking about Jukebox Hero, I read a story somewhere that those big backing vocals weren't originally supposed to be in the mix. Like, you guys got a mix back and they were missing, and Mutt freaked out and was like, where's the backing vocals? And then you guys had to go and redo the mix. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, I do remember doing that. We could have put the backing vocals from earlier in the song in that section, but even the backing vocals by that time should have been more intense and maybe with a higher note on the top yet.
Mm-hmm.
So at the 11th hour, we were in there singing our tails off.
So who was doing all the backing vocals? Was it you, Mutt, and Mick around a mic, or just you and Mutt?
I believe it was myself, Rick Wills, Mick. I'm not so sure who else, and Mutt for sure.
Yeah. Was Mutt's vocal like predominant in the backing vocals on that record?
I don't think it's predominant, not as predominant in some of the things as some of the things he records with other groups.
Right. I mean,
you can listen to a couple of things and you know right away it's Mutt. Yep. And you wonder where the rest of the group is.
Yeah.
But I thought his voice was important, but we kept it in the mix, not above the mix.
Right, blended it in there.
Blended it in there.
Yep.
Let me take you over to the 40th, the Foreigner 40th tour that you did. I got to see a show out at one of the casinos, Mohegan Sun, I believe, and it was just such a fantastic moment. They come out with they do the stuff with Jeff Pilson and Kelly and stuff, and then you and Dennis and Ian, you pop out and you sing, and it was magical. Talk to me about that time. What was it like having Dennis Elliott on the drums again? Because that guy's just a monster. And do you see yourself doing a few more down the road? Because, I mean, COVID sort of, you know, put a stop to it. But is there a chance for more of those shows? Because it was one of the greatest shows in my life. And I've seen like 4,000 shows.
A slim possibility. I'm not sure that, you know, Mick is not in good health.
Mm.
He had an operation about a month or 6 weeks ago, and I saw him in a video playing with the band, and he looks drawn and weak.
Mm.
Want him to take care of himself and relax a little bit and don't put the strain of playing shows on himself. I mean, he's done shows for 15, 20 years longer than I have. When I got in the band, I was 25 and he was 37. I'm 70 now.
I'm trying to do the math real quick. He's 82?
Wow. Something like that.
I don't think anyone would ever admit that, but I do think that he may not be 82, but he's closer to 80 than I am.
Yeah. And he doesn't need to be on the road with the guys. I mean, he doesn't have anything to prove at this point.
Nope.
He really doesn't. And you know, the band sounds great. I've seen shows with him and without him, and the band sounds great. Let me take you over to Mr. Moonlight. This is one of these albums that comes out in the mid-90s, and again, it falls under the radar, but there are two songs particularly on there, Rain and White Lie, which might be two of the greatest Foreigner songs ever written.
Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
Totally agree.
Right?
Yeah.
So quickly talk to me about that, and is there a frustration when you come up with these songs, such great music, and then just radio ignores it, MTV ignores it? Is that frustrating, or are you still just proud that, listen, I don't care. I made a great song. I don't care.
I'm proud and frustrated.
Right.
But in that time period, that's when there was upheaval in the music business, and a lot of the big record companies had to pare down their staff, and that's when the independents came in and were signing groups, and we were signed by an independent label, and we had plenty of money to do an album, but they had little to no promotional staff.
Mm.
So the you know, 8 weeks, 10 weeks after the album came out, we had never heard anything on the album on any of the radio stations around. And we would call people and ask them to go to the record store just to see if the record was there. So, and 9 times out of 10, it was not there. So they had no promotion staff, and they had no product placed in the major stores.
Hmm.
So, but although it's a great album, it really ends up being a throwaway.
But it's interesting to me, though, because it's like, you guys are Foreigner. Like, why isn't how come you're going to an independent instead of, like, how come Atlantic's not holding on to you at that point?
Well, it was 1994.
It was mutual that they let us go and we wanted to go.
Hmm. Okay, so you guys wanted to go.
Well, yeah, the other thing is they were moving on to, you know, what ended up being the Bruno Marses and the more pop,
the Pinks and all those artists. The pop, yeah, art.
Well, even even the drummer Mark Shulman ends up with Pink and Cher. He went in the pop direction.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
smart man.
That's where the money was.
Okay. Right, smart man.
But I wasn't going to change my direction to that. I couldn't see me doing that for the sake of
no. Lou Gramm wasn't going to sell out.
No, I couldn't see that. And honestly, I think Mr. Moonlight was one of the better Foreigner albums that ever existed.
100% agreed.
But the grooves were really deep, and the production was terrific.
Yep.
I'm so proud of that album, and so sad that it never even scratched the surface.
Yep. Oh yeah. Listen, folks listening today, go look up White Lie and Rain. It's two of the greatest songs you'll ever hear. Yeah. Speaking of that, though, with the stuff moving to pop and there was grunge back, and did record companies come to you and say, listen, we need to change your sound, whether it's with Shadow King or the solo albums or with this Foreigner? Did they come and say, listen, you need to be a little bit more dance beat here. Just switch it up, guys.
No.
Nope. Smart.
Not that I think we would have, but I think they wanted to, it's important for record companies to garner fresh talent and build it. I think we were a little long. We were far along in our career to have that happen.
Hmm.
I want to know what love is. Again, one of the greatest ballads. Did you also get some kind of pressure from the record company at that time to say, all right, you've got a great ballad, you're going to be a ballad band, next album has to be 10 ballads. Did they start, did you get that pressure with that song as well?
No, but after Waiting for a Girl Like You, I think Mick wanted to make sure that there was always a strong ballad in the 10 songs that were on the album.
Mm.
But little did he know that the first song on the album after Foreigner 4 would be released as a single, the ballad. You know, so we come off a huge ballad, Waiting for a Girl, and then the first single on the next album is a ballad. You know, so I was definitely beginning to feel that they wanted us to be like Air Supply or somebody like that, you know, somewhat of a ballad band or whatever. And I was raging angry that this was happening, you know. Usually the ballad should come third single, fourth single, whatever.
Yep. You know? Agreed.
Yeah.
You need, because, you know, a band like us needs to prove our rock strength every time out. First single should be a balls out killer, you know?
Yeah.
And then the second and third one, you know, different format, but still rocking, you know?
Yeah.
And then the ballad could come out, you know, and that's one that affects people the most, I think. After they've been rocked, then they get the sweet stuff.
Every album should open with a song like Feels Like the First Time, that come on.
So after I Want to Know What Love Is, and then Atlantic seemed reluctant to release the second and third single. I think we had maybe two singles, possibly three, but they weren't putting in the effort to promote them. And it was very strange. I was feeling that we were being manipulated into becoming a ballad band.
Well, listen, as a fan back then, watching MTV and Much Music, I saw that. You know, I was used to Jukebox Hero. I was used to Hot Blooded. I was used to all that. And by 85, 86, what I saw on TV was a ballad band. And they really seemed to go ballad band.
After I Want to Know What Love Is was I Don't Want to Live Without You.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that was released first or second on the next album. And by then, I was out the door.
Yeah, they gave us 5 years of being a ballad band, and you could see it. You know, you look at MTV from 84 onwards, or Much Music 84 onward, 85 onwards, and Foreigner was no longer a rock band, not the presentation on TV.
You're right. As much as I worked my tail off on I Want to Know What Love Is, I think I had a strong presence on that album and was contributing ideas to the arrangement too. I got zero credit on that song. So the song was number one around the world. And the reality is he made 100% of the song royalties.
Really?
I was aced out of that completely.
Really?
Did that happen a lot though in the 80s? I mean, like, because I'm always curious how that works. Just talk about songwriting really quickly, because it's like we're running out of time. If you're in the studio,
when the band started, Mick was very fair. It was always, no matter who contributed what, between him and I, it was 50-50 or 60-40.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was always 50-50 or close to 50-50. When Waiting for a Girl came out, it was 75-25.
Okay. Mm. Really?
And then when I Want to Know What Love Is came out, it was he offered me 95-5. And I says, I don't want 5.
Wow, I never heard that before. That's
so
crazy.
He kept 100.
I have to say, I've never understood that when, you know, when a song is created, the guitar riff is important, the vocal is important, the drum and the drum fills are important, and they all make the song. I don't understand the guy who writes the words gets the credit, because the song is everything.
Yeah.
It's not a poem, right?
The whole arrangement.
just the lyrics is a poem.
It's the package.
It's the package. I've never understood. I mean, I've always figured that every band should be 25, 25, 25, or 20, 20, 20, depending on how many people are in the band.
Hey, remember that old saying, write a word, get a third.
Yeah, that's...
I never heard that before.
Yeah, that's the silliest thing ever.
After I Want to Know What Love Is, when I was really treated fairly there, then he came out with I Don't Want to Live Without You. That was completely done by him. I didn't want to even partake in that.
Mm.
And then he started writing songs completely and showing them to me, just wanted me to sing them. No input on lyrics or melody or anything. He came to me with complete songs that he had written and just wanted me to sing them.
What is wow, that, that's got to be frustrating.
Is that ego? Yeah. Is that just like control?
You could call it that.
Because, I mean, you're well competent in the songwriting department. It's like, wouldn't you want it to be a collaborative effort at that point?
I always wanted it collaborative, but after a certain point, it just he got caught up in what he was doing and didn't want input.
Mm-hmm. Did Mutt do any ghost co-writing on Foreigner 4 with you guys and didn't take any credit?
I don't think so.
No.
Let me just before we wrap up, since we're in Canada, you did, of course, get a chance to do some background vocals on one of the greatest Canadian records ever, which is Bryan Adams' Reckless. I mean, it's yeah, Diamond or Double Diamond, I think, at this point.
Yeah, it's sold millions.
How many is that?
At least 20 million.
Wow. Well, that 20 million is American. Diamond in Canada is a million, so double diamonds, 2 million.
So we'll go 10.
So, yeah. but, I mean, you've got Jim Vallance on there. You've got Bob Claremont and Tina Turner. You've got Mickey Curry, Steve Smith. I mean, it's an all-star cast.
God on the guitar, man. It's one of the greatest records of the 80s, and it's really cool that you had a little bit of a hand in that, you know? Do you have any memories of those recording sessions?
I remember that Foreigner and Brian were recording in the same studio but in different rooms.
Mm.
And we were taking a break and Brian comes in and he looks like he's in a panic. And he goes right into the control room and tells Mick, and I know this for sure because the mic was on. I could hear everything that he was saying. He's saying he was nervous because he had some backgrounds to do. There was a virus going through his band. Everybody in the band was laryngitis and just couldn't sing a note.
Oh man!
And he had some backgrounds done, but he needed someone that could adapt and sing them right away. So Mick pointed to the door, and I was out there, and he says, Luke, would you help me? And I says, yeah. I says, Mick's doing guitar leads. I'll come right over.
And I mean, you can't get a better backing vocal team than that. You got Foreigner in the studio next door.
He had some backgrounds from his guys.
Yeah,
but I doubled them. I put my parts in there. And I beefed almost everything up.
Wow, that's great.
That's awesome.
Very, very, very thankful.
I can imagine. Here, I'm just going to throw in a gratuitous plug, by the way. Keith Scott, the guitarist for Bryan Adams, yes, one of the most underrated guitarists in the world. I mean, that guy is phenomenal.
Yes, he's awesome. He's been with him forever, right?
Yeah, from the beginning. Man.
Yep, and Brian sent me a gold album.
Nice.
See, yes. Brian's a good guy.
Did you get paid for the session, or you just he's like, here's a gift?
I didn't want anything for the session. Didn't want anything for the session. Yeah. He offered, and I told him no.
I don't remember, but did Foreigner and Bryan Adams tour? Didn't he open for you at some point?
Yes, he did.
Hmm.
I think it was their first tour. We had Foreigner 4 out, and I'm trying to think who opened for us for the first part of the tour, but he caught up with us the second leg of the tour, and he kicked butt. I believe that particular tour went a long way in making him a star.
Right. I can imagine. And as a band, do you ever look out to those openers at like a Brian and go, yeah, that guy's got it. He will be headlining next year. You can tell.
I always pay attention for ourselves too. Mm. You know, in case somebody can't continue playing, we have a name that would fit the bill.
Right. And you work with Mutt Lange. He ended up going off to work with Mutt.
Yes, he did. Cool.
Yeah, and I think vocally they're in the same range. I just, there's a grittiness to Lou's vocal and to Brian's vocal, which is just phenomenal. Love
and
them both.
He still sounds as great as he did back in the day. And actually, funny enough, Lou, he's working with Mutt on a brand new record right now that's supposed to come out this year. So he pulled Mutt Lange out of retirement to do some new.
Yeah, he is.
That's good. I hope somebody plays it.
And I hope somebody calls you to do some more background vocals.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Or a duet. Lou, always a pleasure.
Yep, absolutely. August 7th. Mitch, it's called the Franklin County Fair?
Franklin County Fair in Malone, New York. And by the way, I've been every year for the last 10 years. It is such a fun time. It's, you know, it's got everything. The fair food, and it's just great. I love it. And they bring in these great bands. I've seen REO Speedwagon and Styx. And now we've got Lou with John Payne and, of course, Steve Augieri. So you get Journey, Foreigner, and Asia songs. It's a top 40 night.
Yep. And then when you're done, you can go down to 37, hit up the Oguzosne Mohawk Casino.
Oh, boy. You know where to go, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we know that area well. Oh, that's great. Lou, always a pleasure, as we say in Montreal. Merci. Just fantastic. And thank you for all the music over the years. It's love it. Yeah. And folks, Mr. Moonlight, come on. Let's go make it a top 10 record now. Go stream it. Let's get it trending.
Stranger things have happened, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Just take somebody to remind folks.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thanks a lot, Lou. Appreciate it so much. And hopefully we'll be able to get over the border and get to see this show. If not, we're gonna sneak over somehow. Whether we have to quarantine or not, we need to see each other.
Sounds good.
All right.
Cheers.